This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Giddy hit Austin!
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest. Jenny hit Austin. Damn, she loves this town. She was coming up for air after living underground. She had a nasty reputation as a girl who lied when she made the declaration, country music has died. She said, it's all right. It's okay, it doesn't make a difference to me anyway. It doesn't make a difference to me anyway.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's Phil Pritchett here. It's that time of the week, folks. The P2 Podcast. Coming to you from philpritchett.com and Radio Free Texas. Broadcasting throughout the world to fans wherever they may be. To every corner of the globe, to offer that hope, that glimmer of guidance, a lighthouse in the fog as you sift through millions and millions of MP3 files, cassette tapes, vinyl records,
eight-track tapes,
millions of satellite radio stations. What is going on? What do I listen to? How does my band make a record? What are the pitfalls that lay ahead? Who's going to show us that roadmap? Discuss the music I love and maybe give us a little nudge, a little hint, a little guidance on the road you can take to stay out of the ditch. That's what we're trying to do here. Phil Pritchett and my good friend, Kurt South. How you doing, South?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
You bet, man. You bet. Always appreciate you coming by. We're going to get into, we always do a news segment here, a feature at the top of the show. Middle part of the show, we're going to get into the mailbag, where it's a catch-all now. Fair game. We just respond to you, the listener. Whatever you're emailing in, we respond to some of those comments or some other feedback. We just get on the street, wherever. That's the mailbag, the middle section. And then we're going to get into, I'm excited about the vault here. What's on Phil's iPod?
Good vault today.
We're going to talk about the great Warren Zevon in the vault. On the iPod, so stick around for that. If you're not familiar with him, you will be by the end of this glorious hour of broadcasting. You know what's in the news today, Kurt?
What is in the news today, Phil?
In the news today is me. Me and you. We got us a nice little feature here. It's been a long time since
feature on us?
Well, you know, a few weeks back, I got a call from Lori Barker James, who is a entertainment writer at the Fort Worth Weekly, the weekly entertainment guide here in Fort Worth, Texas. What was so great about this is people pay publicists, radio promoters,
mm-hmm.
Take people to lunch, solicit protest outside of, you know what, to get their name out, to get stuff going on.
Right.
And I'm guilty of that early on in my career. You know, you want to get noticed and things. But I was just, what happened here is Phil was just, and I apologize for speaking of myself in the third person, just minding my own business here at Trinidad World Recording, producing some bands and writing my own songs, booking shows, etc. And I get a call from Lori, very nice person. She had a copy of The Bullfighter Returns, the most recent studio album of Phil Pritchett and the full band. I know you're very familiar with that.
I am. Work of art it is.
Well, thank you very much. She was interested in the album. She said, I came across this in our offices. I don't know how it got over there, quite frankly, but somebody had turned her attention to it.
I mailed it to her.
Did you really? You mailed it in?
I sent it to her. I sent her a care package.
Well, I thank you very much, Kurt. Well, that's the that's what we got. So she was very kind and wanted to talk about the record. Well, I convinced her. I said, well, I'm over here at the office if you want to come by. So she came by, looked at the studio, ended up doing a nice feature here on the studio. I got to admit, I was a little, it was very positive, very nice. Although when you read it as a whole, I got to say I had a little sinking feeling in my stomach because it goes through a lot of the facts of my career, a lot of which, aren't very glowing. There's a lot of hardship, a lot of failure in this article. There's no, in other words, there is not an article about how I received a phone call from Rick Rubin or T-Bone Burnett, or I'll never forget hearing my song being played on the radio, sung by the great Garth Brooks or anything. Nothing like that is in this article because it's factual and none of that has ever happened. You know, a lot about me coming back from Nashville with not a lot going on, bottoming out. It does say I had a fairly successful time on the Texas music merry-go-round in the late 90s.
You did. You did.
I'm not Texas. Still on the merry-go-round. I'm not still on the merry-go-round. Oh, boy. But a very nice piece, It's always hard to read about yourself in these things. It's
You love it.
Pretty funny. Of course you love it. You love it. Like, hey, there I am. You read it, and like, yeah, it's great. And you read it again, and you're kind of it's kind of got
it. Is there a picture?
There is a picture, yeah.
Let me see the picture.
I'm sitting at the Hammond M3 organ there. Picture. Here, Trinidad World Recording.
It's a good, strong picture. You take a good picture.
Well, thank you very much.
I look
like I'm
singing. It's like an Annie Leibovitz shot.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very nice. It does. Very nice. No, that's a good article. I think that's one of the things that appeals to me about that article is that it's not publicist-driven, and they're not trying to blow a bunch of smoke up our ass and feed us a bunch of BS about you and your
career. Well, I feel like
it's all the truth, and the truth is you have been doing this. You've forgotten more music than most people are ever going to know.
I think that's probably
and
right.
You have survived, and you have a thriving business. That's the story. That's the story.
I'm news.
That's news.
That's what I was reading.
Because
I'm news.
Most of the time you pick up a publication like that, or you read reviews or articles about bands, it's publicist-driven. It's a bunch of BS about how they have the world shaking in their boots with their new album coming out.
Yeah, right, right.
48 people are going to hear.
It's hype. It's pure hype.
There's no hype. There's no hype. It's just what's going on. And what is going on is you have a great studio. You have a career. And
well, thank you, Sal. Thank you, Sal.
I think that is newsworthy, and I think it's a refreshing piece of news because it's not a bunch of BS.
Yeah, I think that's what was refreshing is to get a call. You always hear that, man, if you got something kind of going on, you won't have to go tell everybody and beat everyone over the head with a board. They'll come to you for the story because someone else has told them about it. So very refreshing. So thanks to Lori Barker James for seeking me out, for following the lead.
She did a good job.
For picking up the trail and just saying, where does this record lead, And there's a lot of stuff in here about the old studio. It's very in-depth, and she got most of the facts dead on. There's always a couple little things that aren't.
She mentioned anything about McCoskey sleeping on the floor of your old studio or anything like that?
No, nothing like that. Nothing like that. Just that I was in the... Yeah, it just kind of goes from my bottoming out in Nashville to moving back home to getting in a abandoned space above the Cadillac Bar, which passed for his studio. It kind of reads like a homeless guy or something who plays
music. A car that passed as a condominium.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Not really. It goes into all my accomplishments and things we've done. Very nice. So nice to see that. So we wanted to talk about. Hey, we have to do a little news section. The news is us, man. This week.
That's good. It should
got some stuff on Kurt South in here. Talks about the podcast quite a bit. How they're able to record and tell our funny stories and all that, and how Kurt South joins me for many of these podcasts. But kind of brings up, you read about the Fort Worth Weekly, the cover story of the Fort Worth Weekly is with the Star-Telegram, the Fort Worth daily newspaper, with some of the lights turning off. Like, are they turning off the lights at the Star-Telegram?
Mm-hmm.
You know, We talk about a lot of media, changing media on this show.
Newspapers are taking it in the pants.
Yeah, well, you just sort of, you look at the Fort Worth Weekly even, especially the Star-Telegram. The dailies, I think, will have a harder time.
Mm-hmm.
So where does that leave us? Is anyone reading these things? Is anybody going to read the Phil article in there?
You know what, you know what I find myself doing more often than
ever now? What's that?
With the Weekly, they have a great website.
Yeah, they do.
That has that everything. Article. Everything that is in the hard version is on the website. And what's great about the website is I can go back to their archives.
Yeah, and read stuff. And well, see, I searched the really website, and this article was on there, and the picture was much bigger. It was full color.
Yep.
And it had links
it's
in there.
It's a much better
it was
layout.
It's really, really cool.
It's a more entertaining read to
experience.
Go to the website.
Right.
And as far as getting just the news, I hate newspapers now.
Yeah, you know, I enjoyed reading them. We get the Star Telegram.
I used
Telegram.
To, but man.
You know, it's the most bizarre thing because when I pick up the newspaper, I already know the news.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I've already seen it. I get updates from USA Today on
You know, I got a Sports Illustrated subscription for Christmas from my wife. And, so it shows up at the house and... Of course, I love sports. I love follow sports and Sports Illustrated. But yeah, you watch a basketball game or the Super Bowl or a golf tournament, and 3 days later, Sports Illustrated shows up. Oh, you know, who won the Masters? I'm kind of like, dude, I stopped thinking about that Sunday night when I read everything I could possibly read on it.
Yeah,
watched all the clips on YouTube.
Everything's in real time now.
It's just now Sports Illustrated might have a unique little take. Someone have an article in there,
mm-hmm.
or they might have some really great pictures. They still have great photographs in there that you probably wouldn't see on a website. So there's some value to it, but it's not very thick. It's not a big magazine. It's gotten smaller, and it's just a couple pages about kind of what happened at the tournament. You know, well written, of course, but
sure,
it doesn't have a lot of. I just kind of leaf through it, you know, and throw it in the recycling bin. I already know the news. I'm like, oh, yeah, there's a little coverage from the Super Bowl. Yeah, some cool pictures of the Steelers. Or I guess occasionally get a really good feature. They'll have, the trouble with athletes. There's recently an article about what happens to these rich athletes. How do they actually go broke?
Yeah.
Just all the ways. And so I read that article. Pretty interesting.
But you can find all that on their website,
that's
though.
Right. That's right. As far as a news source, I just don't know how relevant it is.
Right. Well, I don't think they're trying to position themselves as a news source anymore, probably. They probably realize that better than anyone else.
Yeah, but they're trying to provide unique content.
Right.
In a physical form, and I don't know if there's a business there, man.
There isn't. The physical form isn't really necessary. It's not like you go to the Sports Illustrated website and it doesn't have all that stuff on it. But you know what told me something about the state of the daily newspaper business?
What's that?
Was last year, my wife and I thought it'd be nice just take the Star-Telegram daily at our house. Well, actually, we didn't think it'd be nice. I couldn't get this guy off my front porch. He would not leave me alone.
Yeah.
Finally, I talked him down. I think for the subscription, he originally wanted $60.
Yeah.
And I wound up giving him $20
for
the subscription. He was willing to negotiate.
And the other thing about those newspapers, if you let them lapse, they run out. Because a couple times I've just kind of said, well, forget. I mean, they'll say you need to renew your subscription for $50.
Yeah.
And I'll look at my wife. She'll say, don't worry about it. I don't care if we quit getting it. But it keeps coming. It never stops coming. I'm like, dude, it just comes anyway.
Well,
what are they doing?
I got tired.
I felt bad and ended up paying back up. But I was like, I went a couple of weeks. I mean, they don't just cut you off.
Well,
they want to be able to show their advertisers it goes to this many houses.
Right. Well, and I got to the point where I was just tired of having 7 unread newspapers.
Yeah, me too.
Sitting around. And I canceled my subscription after a while. They called me. They went about a 2-week stretch. They called me daily.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally got really upset with them and said, listen, quit calling me. And the lady that I talked to this particular day that I lost it said, well, Mr. South, I have to call you. You're on my list. I have to call people on my list. I said, well, I'd like to talk to your supervisor. I get a supervisor on the phone. And I said, listen, this is Mr. South at this address. I do not want the Star-Telegram. I do not want to be called.
Delivered to my house.
I do not. Thank you, but the relationship has been severed. We are breaking up.
You broke up with the Star-Telegram.
And he proceeded to ply me with a sales pitch. Yeah. Just start, well, Mr. South, hey, wait a minute. Listen
how,
to this.
How about this?
Listen to this.
How about this?
And I had to get ugly almost with the guy and just say, listen,
geez.
Don't want to, but that's, I mean, they're desperate for those subscriptions.
They
man.
Are.
They
and,
really
and
are.
The other thing is just that, you know, what shocked me is just, it just kept coming. And you kind of think about it. You're like, well, they're not making their money on my $50 that they're trying to, they're selling the advertising. And
Right.
They've yeah, it really is. I had a similar experience with the Wall Street Journal. I had a subscription to the Wall Street Journal for years.
That's heady.
Very heady. And then, great stuff in there. I love reading it every morning. And then, same deal. They asked if you wanted to renew. You've been a value. I just went, you know, I was moving. I just don't read as much. So I didn't do it. Man, same deal.
Mm-hmm.
Inundated with phone calls. You know, here's a list of guys who want, at one time subscribed.
Right.
Go to it, man. They got to ruin people on the phone trying to hustle that business, you know.
Yeah.
And, well, I was same kind of deal. We just have to go, do not, please stop calling me. I love the paper, but
yeah,
I don't want it. I don't want it in my house. Stop.
You know what? They still send people by the house.
Yeah.
Still, and, you know, they just come up there and, you know, you want to be nice. You want to be courteous. They're just trying to make a living like everyone else. But, man, it's a beat. They come at like 8:30 at night, too.
Really?
The most inconvenient times. Yeah. I'm just in my smoking jacket and slippers.
Slippers, yeah.
At the glorious South Compound.
Yeah.
Smoking my pipe, drinking a brandy or a
petting
scotch.
Petting your Persian cats. Just yeah. Like, what? Who's at the door? Dear God, who's at the door now?
And I have to go out there and listen to some guy try to convince me why I need smeared black ink on white paper.
That's right.
To be informed.
Well, but God love the press and the concrete physical product this week, Fort Worth Weekly, as they feature yours truly, P2, in there in the studio talking about making records. If you want to come make a record at Trinidad, I don't care who you are, where you are, 817-733-5256, and I'll at least tell you what we can do, and we can help you out and have fun doing it. Also, go to philpritchett.com for all your questions and music, p2tunes.com. All of my albums are there for $4. And also, don't forget iTunes, where you can get Phil Pritchett music at will, as well as Kurt South music. Well, coming up, we'll get into the mailbag. We will respond to your emails, comments, and the word on the street on what's going on with the podcast when we come back.
But it's gone the way of big band, as far as I can tell. Yeah, they're both in a museum behind the glass. Rock and roll is the future, the present and the past. You know, it's alright, it's okay. It doesn't make a difference to me anyway. It's alright, it's okay. It doesn't make a difference to me anyway. Doesn't make a difference to me anyway.
Welcome back, everybody. Phil Pritchett here with my good friend Kurt South on the P2 Podcast from Trinidad World Recording Studios, my studio here in Fort Worth. It's that time of the show, South. We're going to get into the mailbag, respond to some of this email we've been getting, some of the comments we've heard on the street. This one caught my eye from Izzy Richardson, a fan, and I think I played her wedding, actually, in Belleville a while back. And in fact, I did. In fact, I know I did. Her and Wade. They had some cups made with my name on it. Very flattering.
Very nice.
Very fun wedding. She said she was recently at a cross-Canadian ragweed show where they had USB, you know, thumb drives available for sale after the show that had the live show that you had just seen recorded on it. Already in, I guess, an MP3 form or something.
Yeah.
You know. And wondered if we had ever considered or looked into that and wanted to know our position on that. Recording the shows and making it available for sale or giving them away. What do you think on that? Recording the shows. It's never a bad idea, is it?
Awesome idea.
Always fun. I mean, people want to see and listen to and continue to experience the show that they have just seen. Isn't that right?
As a matter of fact, I think that might be one of the most valuable things to a fan, is to be able to really, if you see a great show, to take home the real souvenir of it. Not just something that reminds you of it, but you actually take the thing home.
Yeah, it is. It's a great thing. And I think the thumb drive deal is a cool idea, convenient, more so than the discs.
Yes.
You know, we've played with Bob Schneider a lot in the last couple of years. A few times. And he has a deal where upon coming into the venue, you can buy a little ticket, like a little raffle ticket for $20. And that, you just, at the end of the show, you take it to his merch guy back there, and they burn you a CD of the show. But you have to kind of wait around while they kind of do it.
It takes a while, yeah.
It takes a while to download it all and burn the discs out. So I asked him about that. I said, man, it seems like he sold a lot of them, you know. People would wait around and get them. And he kind of said that the key was selling those tickets at the beginning of the show.
Right.
Because if you say, look, if you want a copy of the CD, wait till after the show, get your $20 and stand in line back there and buy a copy of the show. I mean, how many people would do that?
Right, right.
The answer is, as Bob and his wisdom has found out, the key is to sell it to them when they walk in the show, because you don't know who's going to stay the whole show.
Right, right.
You don't know, I mean, and he kind of laughed. He goes, oh, because I don't know how many tickets we've sold to people coming into the show, and they didn't stick around and wait for their CD to get burned, you know.
Right, right.
Picked up some girl or something.
Because I bet that.
Drank too much and went home early.
Yeah.
I bet that takes a while. That's the key, you know. So if you could sell it early on, I think it'd work. Of course, the other thing is, and it's gotten easier in recent years, is the recording. You know, you still want to make something that sounds good. And it's easier to do that than ever, really.
You know, it's real simple.
Get a laptop and a few lines off the main board, or however you want to do it. There's a couple different ways to do it.
The stereo feed off the board, right? And an interface into your laptop. And now, what I'm wondering, when they do these shows, like after Bob's show or the Ragweed show, is the entire show just one big MP3 file?
Like one long song if you imported it?
Or do they don't cut it up into tracks?
No, I think, I'm not sure. I would think it would just be like a, because obviously a full show wouldn't fit on a disc. I wonder how Bob does that. Because you couldn't fit a 2-hour show on a CD. I mean, you have to have it in some
sort of. They edited into two long MP3s, I would guess.
Or two discs or something. You'd have to have something, CD can only hold, what is it,
74 minutes, something like that.
Of music. But that's at a certain bit rate. And so I guess if it was an MP3 conversion or something, you could put all kinds of stuff on there. It wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they're doing. I'm not sure. But so, yeah, it is cool because the Ragweed deal had a thumb drive on like a lanyard, you know, you just kind of, or a wristband or something, that you could do. So that's pretty cool, man. Another way to sell something. So I'm all for it. I noticed I went to that Derek Trucks show at the Granada a while back. Me and Larry Dillon. Larry Dillon owns the building that the Trinidad World Recording Studio is in. Larry's got his studio here as well, Wavelight Studios here in Fort Worth. He's a big guitar fan, Dillon.
He is.
Loves it. So we actually went to Eric Clapton together. Got to sit in a box at the American Airlines Center a while back for the Clapton show. And that's when he had Derek Trucks with him playing slide. I didn't know much about him on the SG, just going off. I was like, wow. And so the great Mike Schroeder at the Granada Theater, my good friend who books us over there and ran CD World in Dallas forever. Love you, Mike. He said, man, Trucks is coming on his own tour. So we went there. And I noticed me and Dillon went to the show. There were tons of poles with the stereo mics in the crowd. Yeah. I guess Trucks probably has an open taping policy.
Yeah, he does.
Whoops. As we do on my website, we have had people record shows and stuff like that. And all you fans are free to do that. So I guess when it comes down to like recording the shows, if someone wants to bring a machine in and record my show and have it and share it and do whatever, that's great. We haven't, besides making like actual live albums, we haven't recorded and then sold them at shows or something. But maybe that's a good way to go. I don't know about how the processing and how much time it'd take to bounce it all down and the mixing and all that's what I would.
You know what?
About.
I'm gonna experiment with that next week.
Kurt South,
and experimenting. I will let you know. I'm gonna take my recording rig to a show and record it and let you know
how it turns out.
How it comes out.
See if you can please the fans in that fashion. Well, another email here that caught my eye, and this is a boy, we went off on the band merch a couple podcasts ago talking about band merch.
Never seen you so angry.
I got heated up. I got lightheaded. I had to stop. I exclaimed. I rolled back in my chair, shot across the room here in the studio. Oh, but I'm recovered now. I'm back. I'm composed. Another thing that I always was really difficult for me as a artist, very, very difficult, was, and I get asked by fans all the time, for stickers and the ubiquitous, that's our favorite word on the show.
Ubiquitous.
Ubiquitous. We use it at least once every podcast. The 8x10, 8x10, 8x11?
8x10 glossy black
glossy
and white.
Black and white photo with the little booking information. The last one I made, I think, was about 2003. And I don't think I'd made one before then. I think I've only made one.
That legendary glossy 8x10 that you have.
Yeah, yeah.
Where Ryan Lynch looks just like Frank the Tank.
From old school.
From old school in that
picture. He'd always have kind of a Will Ferrell look to him.
Just the real, yeah, just kind of surprised, and really didn't even know he was in the picture.
Staring off into space.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was taken on a dart train. We were in Dallas shooting around with Troy Johnson at the time and a photographer shooting some random candid shots. It was a good shot and came out well, but it was a while back. I guess my thought on it was always this. When I go to a club, of course, like the surf club has a huge wall. The Blue Light in Lubbock has a huge wall of the black and whites, old posters. Now, posters are cool.
Yes.
There's a couple Phil Pritchett posters there. I'm proud of them. Ah, look at that, big bullfighter thing. Or we blew that actual photo up in those gigantic Budweiser posters. Remember those?
Oh, yeah.
Like the size of a wall. They were awesome.
I had one in my garage for the longest time.
They were... really fun, looked really great. But the stickers and the black and white photos, when I look at a wall, the wall of the firehouse or the surf club or the old Poor David's pub, it's very rare you come across a Lyle Lovett or a Robert Earl Keen. Very rare.
Somebody who's still
relevant out there.
And still
working. Even when you do that, it's kind of an old, embarrassing photograph, you know?
Just Lyle Lovett wearing a bolo tie.
Just Keen like wearing a shiny paisley vest with like a goatee and a little ponytail. Remember that era?
Yeah.
You know, with kind of the Cavaricci pants.
It's painful.
And the black boots with the silver tip on the toe.
Very painful.
You know, he was there. And it's just a frozen in time thing. For the artist who has gone on and stuck with it and survived, it's an embarrassing memento.
It is.
And for everyone else, oh my gosh, the other 99%, it's an epitaph, a graveyard of bands. Where I see their faces on the wall, and I think, you know, when that picture was taken, they just knew this was the beginning of something big. That they probably asked that their picture be put on the wall. Mm-hmm. You want me to sign it? Thanks for all the support. We'll be back at Surf Club. It's just some girl with teased hair and... she's long gone. I don't even know who she is. But there it is up there collecting dust. And it always makes me very, very sad when I go see these things. I just feel tremendous sadness. Like, man, I don't want to be that.
No.
I want to be someone who's actively playing. You know, I don't have to find Phil on the wall. He's playing next month, man.
Yeah.
It's great. Go check it out. Or take your picture with him. You know, I mean, just hold up your phone, take your picture, put it on your MP3, put it on your MySpace and Facebook, whatever you want.
The best graveyard of glossy 8x10 black and white promos is at the White Elephant Saloon here in Florida.
Oh, of course.
You have all these. There's a good one of Ray Wiley Hubbard just circa 1986.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even look like Ray Wiley Hubbard.
I mean, bloodshot eyes.
And he's kind of looks like he's wearing a jacket with some turquoise and some embroidery. And he looks like he just... walked out of a tornado that went through the middle of Santa Fe or something.
Well, he's kind of that northeastern New Mexico kind of guy. He's from up there or something. Spent some time there.
There's one at Jack Ingram back in his Lucky Dog days where Jack looks like he's about 17.
Boy, he was big in those days, or bigger than he is now.
Yeah.
A little puffy.
A little pasty looking.
He's wearing like a Hogan golf hat and a button down shirt, and some khaki pants. That picture's in the surf club of Jack.
Yeah,
You know where he's like sitting on a you know, lean up against a
lean up against
like a tractor or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Not there's a, but just yeah, it is. It is funny.
But if Jack walked Jack in and see saw that and go, picture, oh, he'd geez, just he would.
Geez. He'd be mortified by the whole thing, probably, or at least laugh at it. And I kind of am, too. And, yeah, I don't know. The black and white photo always shied away from it. I'm kind of like, hey, here's the posters from the gig. If you want an actual gig poster.
Yeah.
I noticed at the blue light, you'd appreciate this, they still have a way up high, way up there. We're out of reach of, you know, drunken, grubbing Pritchett fan hands way up there. Is me in a gigantic Suburban Legends poster, holding the dried fruit,
yes,
and the prunes and the suede jacket Suburban Legends
those
era.
Those were good days for you.
Yeah, dude, iconic shots from Suburban Legends.
Yeah,
you know, we always talk about it, man. There just wasn't a lot of bands back there, mid late '90s. Not nearly as many as they are now. And so yeah, those posters got out there and. The other problem with the 8x10 is that the information changes. You know, you put your booking agent, his address and his phone number, and you make 100 of them, then he calls and goes, oh, I got a new number now. Or you fire him, you get another booking
agent. It changes every 3 months.
The P.O. box changes. It changes every 3 months, the information changes. And you have a stack of, like the minimum run, they're not expensive to make. They're like, it's like ABC Photos. There's like one company that just kind of, that's all they do. It's like $100 for 500. You just send them in the deal.
Here's my problem with the 8x10 glossy. I do not like having my picture taken if I have to pose for it. Because you always look like a cheese dick.
Yeah, yeah.
Always. It is impossible to sit and pose for a picture like a bunch of guys leaning up against a barn all dressed up in their, you know, whatever outfits. And
yeah, you know,
you look ridiculous. Yeah. Now, if it's a live shot where it's a candid photo, I like
sweats
those.
Flying off. Something. Yeah, that's cool. Man, that's always cool.
If a photographer walks in here and goes, "Okay, you and the band, y'all look cool.
Put your hands in your pockets. You know,
try to look off in the distance like you're too cool.
Yeah,
to kind
of look off in in high school, we always had kind of that. Of course, you had the here comes the word again. You ready? The ubiquitous band photo was, of course, the Joshua Tree. U2 standing in a desert, all out of position, slightly out of focus, everyone gazing off in a different direction. And then every band that came out in high school, we all entered Battle of the Bands. It was all a picture of the band standing in a field or up on a rooftop, just gazing off in the distance. And one guy would have the Bono hair. You know, one guy would be wearing like an Edge cowboy hat.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how it was. And so that was kind of the band photo. And then I feel like in the early Texas music years, everybody had on like the Red Wings, the ball cap.
Yeah.
And like a black Labrador that would later be.
And a shotgun. And
a shotgun, yeah.
Yeah.
And the title of the album was called like, you know, Panhandle Moon or something. And, you know, a dog, it should be said.
My next album will be called Panhandle Moon. You heard it here first.
You know, and a well-bred dog.
Yeah, a Britney Spaniel.
That would later be raised by that kid's parents. You know, as he proves that he can't take care of it, and keeps getting out of his buddies. Dude, you know, remember in college, guys would come home with a dog.
Oh
some full-bred, high,
just a Weimaraner that they Labrador. Paid $2,500 for.
Yeah, and he doesn't train it. He locks it in his dorm room all day when he goes to class. And the dog gets out and just runs around the neighborhood. And just, they were just dog. In our neighborhood in Austin, a lot of students lived there, and they were always just dog. You know, well-bred, not mutts. I mean, these are all these fraternity guys all had like full-bred black Labradors, and you know, whatever, just running around. Well, but some of them made it on the album covers as they made records as well.
Yes, yes.
Well, those are the pitfalls. The sticker, I feel, is the same way.
The
sticker, you know,
The best place for stickers for the epitaphs, Woody's Tavern in Fort Worth.
Oh yeah,
go look all around, and you'll look up at these stickers and go, I remember that band.
I remember that guy. What happened to that guy?
Yeah, what happened to him? And
you won't find many Phil Pritchett stickers. We made a couple, but you know, they just, you know, it's very rare we have like. Of course, we always love the Cross Canadian Ragweed, the badge. That's a great logo. It's a great name and. It's very rare. I mean, it's hard to write your name in a cool way. You really think about like Bob Dylan, Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
You don't think of a logo. It's just some long name. You know, like, I don't know. Does he
How do you make Springsteen look cool?
I don't know. Yeah. That just looks like, you
it's
know.
Like 14 letters in there.
Your lawyer's name on a contract or something.
Yeah.
There's nothing that says rock and roll.
Right.
You need like a abbreviation or something. So anyway, those are the pitfalls with the 8x10 bands. Now that you have the internet and stuff, I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Stickers, don't take those posed pictures.
Posed pictures. Just have someone snap some candid shots of you on stage. You'll probably be better served.
We know who you are. I see your pictures all the time. Don't do it.
And remember, it's going to hang in that bar forever. Long after you've gotten out of the music business, people are going to go, man, whatever happened to that guy?
And no faux hawks. No faux hawks.
Did you always turn this show into a fashion decree?
It drives me nuts.
Going around your leather armbands, wearing your girlfriend's jeans with a faux hawk, you're gonna look ridiculous.
And you play in a country band. It drives me up the damn wall and back down again. Don't do it.
South is just you're a fashion Nazi is what you
are. And one more thing, no forearm tattoos.
Yeah. Okay. Well, geez.
No for this is a topic. Tell me I'm wrong.
That's a topic for another time.
A topic for another day.
I always wear a jacket in the summer to cover mine. I'm just kidding. Oh. Well, man, I'm very excited about this next topic we're going to get into. What's on Phil's iPod? I think our Texas music listeners on Radio Free Texas and PhilPritchard.com, guys who own, a lot of Texas music, their vault maybe consists of Willie Nelson, Jerry Jeff Walker, Ray Wyatt Hubbard, Billy Joe Shaver, etc.
Joe Pat Hennen.
Do they have Joe Pat Hennen? Do they own any Warren Zevon records?
Maybe some. If not,
I saw Mickey the Motor Cars doing Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
Yeah, and
is that the one they did?
Yeah, Reckless Kelly recorded a Warren Zevon song on the Warren Zevon tribute. They did a duet with Steve Earle.
Oh, that's right. I remember reading about
that. What song was it?
Did they do Carmelita?
No.
I don't know. The last Ragweed show I went to, I went up and they sound checked to Carmelita.
It's a great song.
Great song. Just a junkie's lament.
It is.
Worked well in that setting, I can tell you. They played it at the show. Did a good job with it. We're going to talk about Zevon's second record, his breakout record with all the hits on it. Of course, it had the hits Werewolves of London and A Lawyer's Guns and Money. Johnny strikes up the band on his record, Excitable Boy. We're going to talk about Excitable Boy. Warren Zevon, kooky, brainy rock when we get back. An Excitable Boy, Warren Zevon. What do you know about Warren Zevon, Kurt? We're looking at his vinyl record here, Excitable Boy.
I know that he told us all so well to enjoy every sandwich.
Enjoy every sandwich. Yeah. Warren Zevon, of course, famously, really his last act on this. In this world, his last great act was a record called The Wind.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of collaborators on that with Bruce Springsteen. One of the most... I don't watch just a lot of TV, but I've always been a big fan of David Letterman. I've always kept up with Dave over the years, just his whole smart-ass thing. I just think it never gets old, even though someone argues going through the motions. And I still love him. Zevon used to sit in for Paul Schaefer sometimes when Schaefer would be out filming or on the road or doing some gig. And then we got Warren Zevon sitting him, leading the band. He's a band leader. And, of course, when Zevon got sick with cancer and it was obvious didn't have a lot of time left, Dave devoted a whole show to Warren Zevon. And I was already a big fan of Zevon when that came on. I go, oh, yeah, he's going to do a whole show on it. But I tell you what, man, I have not seen a whole lot of television that was that moving, man.
It was.
I mean, I was trying to think of something that would even compare to that. I mean, you think of maybe like, I'm a little too young for it, but like, you know, Johnny Carson's last show or...
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, Seinfeld something.
Last
Cheers.
Episode of MASH.
Yeah, right. But those are yeah. make-believe shows. This, you know, this is a man
Real
dying.
Real life, yeah.
This is a man dying. Dave was always a huge fan. And, man, that show, there's clips of it on YouTube of him playing Mutineer and rolling the headless Thompson gunner. I mean, just yeah. it just sends chills down your spine. And that was a great record, The Wind. So go check that out on YouTube. Warren Zevon, his final appearance on David Letterman. Talking very frankly and very humorously about his life and his impending death, and playing his music, and Dave asking him questions. Man, I remember just it's really stuck with me. I still think about it. And since that episode, I've really gotten interested in his older work that I always, you know, I knew the songs from, but didn't know a whole lot about his life and work. But he made his first record with Jackson Browne. Zevon was he bounced around. I think with one of the Everly Brothers, like Phil Everly. He was their band leader.
Yeah.
You know, toured with the Everly Brothers, I think, in like the 60s or something, all over the world. And he was the keyboard guy, band leader. Made his first record. He kind of fell into the whole L.A. West Coast music scene. Linda Ronstadt, the Eagles, Fleetwood Mac, Jackson Browne.
Yeah.
Jackson Browne and him were big buddies. And, you know, in the 70s, probably just doing a lot of cocaine and playing music. But Jackson Browne produced his first record that had Carmelita on it. It's just yeah. Warren Zevon, right?
That's yeah, just Warren Zevon. Solo.
Well, his second record, it was coolly received, I think, commercially, even though there's some great, it's a brilliant record, the first yeah. Zevon record. But I was going to focus on his second album, kind of his, he was never a commercial kingpin by any stretch, Warren Zevon. They did have some breakout hits here on Excitable
yeah,
Boy.
Yeah.
Johnny strikes up the band. Johnny strikes up the band. When Johnny strikes up the band, Johnny strikes up the band, Johnny strikes up the band.
I got Johnny Strikes Up the Band. Love it. Excitable Boy. You know, kind of a joyful little song about rape. I don't know. Or something. Or isn't that what it's about? That's what I always thought.
That's what I've always heard it was about.
You know, he's just an excitable boy. Excitable Boy, I said. Werewolves of London. You have John McVie and Mick Fleetwood playing on there.
And I didn't know that until now.
You know, you go back to listen to Werewolves of London. It's got those little... There's little snare hits and little yeah, fills little where there shouldn't be, which is a yeah. sure sign Mick Fleetwood of Fleetwood Mac playing the drums.
Yeah.
Always an unconventional drummer. Always doing kind of wild stuff. Just, you know, doing little fills and little cymbal hits in the middle of verses.
Another man is no stranger to the cocaine.
No. Oh, good grief. Accidentally Like a Martyr, which has been covered by a lot of other bands. I know Linda Ronstadt covered, what was her big hit? She did one of his songs. What was the other? Poor, Poor, Pitiful Me, yeah. which was on his first record.
I always forget that's a Warren Zevon song.
Yeah, that's yeah. right. Werewolves of London, Veracruz, Lawyers, Guns, and Money. My favorite, though, man, over the years, just the whacked out. He wrote this song. He was living in Spain, playing a weekly thing in a bar. He was very depressed, drug addicted, alcoholic his whole life, Warren Zevon, until the bitter end, or you know, until late in his life, I believe. Really struggled with addiction. The great Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner. Man, just an epic tale that would just put a frown, a confused, furrowed look on the lighthearted music fan. To listen to Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner and shed a tear, as I have, you have to have some kind of a sense of of irony, a sense of
you have to have a
sardonic
dark,
wit,
a dark sense of
a
humor,
a dark sense of humor. You know, you have to be interested in kind of like the CIA and the undergoings of the U.S. government abroad. It's just such a funny, sinister, and overall, for me, a compelling song and a kind of a heartbreaking, ghastly, ghostly tune.
Warren Zevon's kind of the spy novelist of rock and roll.
Yeah,
I mean, and see,
it's like kind of Tom Clancy books set to music.
Yeah,
produced
it really
by
is.
Jackson Browne. Jackson Browne produced this one as well, along with Waddy Wachtel, the great guitar player. Oh man, we used to listen to this, and we went through a phase with Jordan Powell as our road manager.
Yeah,
Jordan Powell, who's now the road manager for Miranda Lambert.
Love
you,
Powell.
He was really into Zevon.
He
of course,
was.
It came out that he was real sick, and everybody, you know, you kind of pick up the old records, start listening to it. And we may listen to a lot of Warren Zevon, man, in the van. Muhammad's Radio, is that on the first record?
Yes, I believe
really
it is,
one.
Yeah.
Another really great one. A lot of great YouTube stuff. I was on YouTube last night, some old classic Zevon performances. Just a wild man, another guy that just... I feel like on the iPod, we're always talking about these artists like Van Morrison, Zevon, Neil Young, guys that are... just difficult, man.
Yeah.
These guys were difficult back then.
They were.
But that's what made them great, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a lot of it, man.
They didn't pander, man. They didn't.
No, they had no reason to. They were going to do what they wanted to do regardless of the consequences.
Yeah.
You know, and that was part of the appeal is the give a damn was turned off.
They follow their muse to a fault.
Yeah.
And Zevon fits into that category.
I mean, absolutely.
Whereas maybe, and this has been pointed out, you know, Jackson Browne maybe didn't, even though a fine songwriter.
Yeah.
Very, very middle of the road.
Yeah.
Had a lot of cross appeal and with his sweet songs. A lot of great songs, but very commercial.
Yeah.
Sweet voice. Zevon, not a great singer or
no.
a sexy guy.
Very much a character voice that you have to...
Oh, man.
His voice has to be telling the story that it is in order for it to sound good.
If he was
just singing some American standard...
Yeah, he couldn't pull off the Rod Stewart songbook deal he's doing now.
But when I think of Warren Zevon, I always think of men in black suits with, like, submachine guns.
Yeah.
That's
just like
what,
just throwing a bag over your head.
Yeah.
And just some piano lick playing in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of... He was in touch with this sort of... underworld that maybe a lot of us didn't see, you know.
Yeah.
Ghastly characters. Yeah, it's also shocking at Carmelita on his first record. You know, it's just a sweet song. Carmelita, hold me tighter. I think I'm sinking down. Then just very casually, just, and I'm all strung out on heroin on the outskirts of town. I remember the first time I heard that when I was a young kid, I was like, did he just say he was strung out on heroin? Like, wow, what? But he just kind of lays it all out there.
But the moral of that story is the brutal honesty,
the
willingness to be laid bare. That's part of his appeal. Also, he's not gonna he's gonna shoot you straight.
That's
what's
right.
cool about it, you know.
No question about
it. He's not gonna cover it up in metaphor. He's just gonna tell you, I'm a junkie.
Yeah,
and this is
and
how
this
it
is
feels.
What happened. He was definitely one of those difficult guys to get your head around. March to the beat of his own drummer. And I think, you know, the perception is, and there's no question about it in my book, to be on American Idol, to be on these record labels now, you have to pander, you have to play the game, you got
to
do the sponsorships. You
have to be a glad handler.
You got to be nice. And there's nothing wrong with being nice, but I think when you're an artist, you, not that you go out of your way to be mean or rude, but you are only following your own muse. And... let the naysayers be damned, you know? If the guy's going to tell you to make a certain kind of record or a certain kind of song, the guys we are drawn to years later are the guys who wouldn't do that, who just went off and just wrote the most bizarre thing they could think of or whatever was really real to them.
Yeah.
And that holds up over time. And the guys who seem to always trying to make the next hit record and shake everyone's hand and please everybody and... work with the hot producer and go on Ellen and Oprah. You're just like, well,
yeah.
If he's gonna let himself do this, why would his record just be full of piss and vinegar if he's out here just, you know.
Yeah, there's no shelf life to that stuff.
Yeah,
it comes and goes. It only lasts as long as it's on the charts, and then once it's gone, you don't even remember it was ever there. It's like pulling your hand out of a bucket of water.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, guys like Zevon and Neil Young and you know, Bob Dylan and the guys who the only thing in it for them was just following that crazy muse wherever it took them. We're still talking about them. It's 40 years later.
Yeah, and you're looking back and you read about them online and things and their lives and their biographies.
Yeah,
and it's fascinating because at the core of it is them struggling with their art and struggling with trying to survive, trying
their
to
demons.
Make a living, struggling with their demons, and there's just so much struggle there. And I feel like a lot of the acts you see today, they don't want to show you any struggle. They want to show you that they are just living in the lap of luxury at all times. Their tour bus, their house, you know, they're vacationing in somewhere, you know. There's no, you know, Neil Young, like you said, he would still like want his gear to be kind of broken on the stage.
Right.
Dylan pulling up to those Traveling Wilderness sessions in that old van, you know. That
piece of crap van.
Well, you know, some people might go, everybody knows he's rich, he's putting on a show or something. I'm like, yeah, but he didn't, it's not important to him, you know, that stuff. Maybe some other stuff is, he had other nice things, of course, but.
He does own half the California coastline.
Yeah, he does. And that was enough. He didn't need a nice car. Like Petty's black Corvette in that video.
Right, right.
Pulling up in the black Corvette.
Well, as an example, what we're talking about is people aren't still talking about Sean Cassidy or Davy Jones.
Who's that? Oh, the Monkees, yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
Well, Sean Cassidy was a teen idol.
Yeah,
and David
right,
Cassidy
right.
back in the late
or
70s.
Or Andy Gibb or...
yeah, they're just...
I mean, they're hot for a while.
We know they were there. They just... There was nothing that could stand the test of time there. It was all a puff of smoke on the charts, and then it's gone. And, you know, a lot of acts who base what they do on their looks and their physical image.
Their trendiness. The fact that they were the absolute cutting edge.
You know, when you get to be 35 and you're a little pudgy and, you know, it's just gone. There's nothing else to market on unless you've been making great stuff the whole time.
Yeah, that's right.
But if you build, you know, it's just building your house on a foundation of a solid foundation as opposed to, you know, trying to appeal to the pop world and be one of those kinds of stars. That's shifting sand, man. It's always moving. It can go out from
and there's always someone
anytime.
Else who can do the job better than you.
Well,
I mean,
you
may be the best for a while, the best looking, the best song, but there's 100 in line, you know. And
it's the difference.
No one can duplicate the kind of career that Dylan's had or Robert Earl Keane. I think a little closer
absolutely.
To home. Some guy that's just out there making one album a year and playing shows. And, yeah, some of the records kind of get way out there, and you're a little – he loses you for a while maybe. But that's what comes with it, man, with those guys.
Part of the deal.
You're going to get records, maybe decades, where you're just like, he's lost me, man. I haven't
– Dylan had a 20-year drought.
Oh, man. No kidding. Neil Young had about a 10-year, 12-year where just no one – or maybe he didn't know where he was. I mean, he's flailing around. But as our good friend Bob Lefsetz said in that, talking about Dylan's interview that's now on bobdylan.com.
Yeah.
With, is it Mike Flanagan?
Someone
Flanagan. Said Dylan, he's just always followed his muse. He's taken so many left turns, he finally ended up on his own path.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he gets back to where he was. Well, that is some talk about our beloved. Beloved in my case, and in Kurt's case, Warren Zevon. Man, check out that first Warren Zevon record, and definitely check out the Big Red Breakout Zevon record, Excitable Boy. Brace yourself for some songs about guns and the CIA and, you know, how the rich guys always get bailed out, you know, and, avoid the consequences. That's what the record deals with.
And also really check out his last performance on Letterman.
Oh, yeah. Because YouTube, David Letterman. If you don't shed a tear, not only are you un-American, you're unhuman.
You're a commie.
Good grief. Warren Zevon, that's what's on Phil's iPod today. Kurt, thanks for being here on the podcast
this
week.
Thanks for having me again.
And we're going to get back into it next week. But until then, folks... download the music at phil@philpritchett.com or email us at phil@philpritchett.com, p2tunes.com. All my records are just $4 a piece. or you can order a drop card off P2 Merch for $35. Download the whole damn catalog, $35. Get my music and Kurt's music also on iTunes.
Yes.
And stay in touch with us out there. We will see you next week. Thanks to our friends at Radio Free Texas and for all the help here in the studio, Trinidad World Recording. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next week. Take care.
Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun, with a Thompson gun for hire, fighting to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra to join the bloody fray. Through 66 and 7, they fought the Congo War with their fingers on their triggers, knee deep in gore. Days and nights they battled the Bantu to their knees. They killed to earn their living and to help out the Congolese. Roland the Thompson gunner, Roland the Thompson gunner. His comrades fought beside him, Van Owen and the rest, but of all the Thompson gunners, Roland was the best. So the CIA decided they wanted Roland dead. That son of a bitch Van Owen blew off Roland's head. Roland the headless Thompson gunner, Norway's bravest sons of the storm. They can still see his headless body stalking through the night in the muzzle flash of Roland's Thompson gun. In the muzzle flash of Roland's Thompson gun. Roland searched the continent for the man who'd done him in. He found him in Mombasa in a ballroom drinking gin. Roland aimed his Thompson gun. He didn't say a word, but he blew out Owen's body from there to Johannesburg. Roland the headless Thompson gunner, Roland the headless Thompson gunner, Roland the headless Thompson.